Blog Talk Radio.
Look, if you had...
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. So glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. Stand behind that glass, there's a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along.
Another interesting start to the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show. Today we have many things, including... Well, that didn't come out well. Anyway...
can we restart the last 40... Can I have the last 45 seconds of my life back, please?
Yeah, you can.
Very rarely do you hear that Todd Rundgren Eminem combination to start the show.
Wait.
Followed by With Send Love.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends.
Okay, okay.
So glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. Stand behind that glass, there's a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along.
Well, you wanted the 45 seconds back, so I said, okay, let's just start now. Go.
There we go. Welcome to the show, everybody. Seth and Sean Sports Radio. Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens. Yeah, interesting day in sports, interesting weekend in sports. We'll hit on a bunch of different things, including hit a little MMA, hit a little bit of tennis, which we don't talk about that often. Very rarely do we bring up sportscasters, but I think Aaron Andrews, we bring in making $55 million today. Probably as good a day as anyone. The person who did not have the best day, but, you know, it was an inevitability in most of our eyes, was Peyton Manning, who announced his retirement after a brilliant 18-year career with Indy, Annapolis, and Denver. And I didn't get a chance to watch the press conference, and I don't really need to. You kind of know what the guy is. He thanks his teammates. He thanks his opponents. He thanked this. He thanked that. Thanked his family. The timing is opportunistic, to say the least. Obviously, he's well past his prime. And with everything coming out about the allegations of Tennessee from when he was a freshman, you know, I get the feeling not that that would have been a key component of it, but I think it assisted in it, in his decision. Plus the idea of him trying to get a job or ending, you know, trying to be maybe become the quarterback for the Rams. You know, you kind of see Johnny Unitas with the Chargers or Joe Namath with the Rams, ironically, later on in life, and you don't want to see that. So he went off on a high note. It's the right time. He'll be very successful, whatever he does. And he does go down with a legacy which has been greatly enhanced over the last 2 months, whether it was deserved or not.
Agreed. Welcome to the show, everybody. Agreed. The second Super Bowl certainly makes him better in the all-time greatness category. If there isn't a turnover in the final fourth quarter, the Broncos would have been the first team to win a Super Bowl without an offensive touchdown, which is interesting to say the least. But he will be inducted into two rings of honor, both the Broncos and the Colts. He was five-time MVP, broken all sorts of records. Look, he's going to go down as one of those greats. Is he number one? All subjective. I mean, I think we could put the top three are Montana, Brady, and Manning, at least in the last 25 years. You can go past that. You can talk Otto Graham. You could talk Wyatt Tittle. You could talk Bart Starr, a litany of different players. But I think the top three for the last 25 years are pretty secure.
Yeah, I mean, you can make arguments for Elway, you can make arguments for Favre, you can make arguments for Marino. But realistically, in my mind, I agree, if you're looking at the top three quarterbacks, really since we've started following football, it's Brady, Manning, and Montana. You can choose Manning would be third for me, just because, you know, for reasons we've discussed previously. But I don't think, you know, he was a brilliant quarterback. a solid leader. You know, he didn't have the postseason record that the other two players did. But, you know, a phenomenal quarterback, and he will, an obvious first ballot Hall of Famer, and you know, someone who will follow, who will go down as one of the truly the pantheon of, he is not in the pantheon of very good, to use my verbiage. So, you know, congratulations to him on a stellar, stellar career.
All right, so let's move on, because we have some MMA stuff. We obviously have Maryland and Syracuse that we need to brush up about. But Aaron Andrews, I think, is an interesting case. We don't talk a lot about law in this on this show. We do, unfortunately, the times we do talk about law have been unfortunate. I mean, we talked Joe Paterno, right? That type of scandal. Normally, it's a scandal that we're talking about. We talked I can't even remember the report that came out. Who is it?
The Deflategate.
What's that? Well, we talked to Flaky, but what was the part in baseball? What was his name? The senator from New Hampshire.
Pete Rose.
Try again. Steroid report.
Oh, I don't remember the name. Wow. John, crap.
Nope, not John.
Yeah.
He was former Secretary of State, wasn't he? The something report.
The Mitchell report.
Mitchell report, George Mitchell.
George Mitchell.
So generally we're talking bad news when it comes to legalese in this show. And again, we are talking bad news when it comes to Aaron Andrews. So Aaron Andrews sues the Marriott where she stayed. Most of us remember what happened about 5 years ago where a person requested a room, got the room next door from Aaron Andrews, plotted this, carved a little groove in the peephole so it would be reversed, and then took video of Aaron Andrews naked getting dressed or doing her hair. I have very stern views on this subject. My views are not shared by anybody else at Blog Talk Radio or Seth Kamens or in general. They're my views and my views alone. And look, was Aaron Andrews wronged? Absolutely. No question about it. Was she wronged by a person? Yes. Was she wronged by the Marriott? Unless there is evidence that comes to light, which I am unaware of, and there has been evidence that has said that a Marriott CEO or somebody on the board of directors did show this video to his friends, which, okay, anybody could have done that at that point. But the fact that Aaron Andrews or anybody else is blaming the Marriott for a six-minute interval in time, I understand that deep pockets are the Marriott's and not the guy that did it. But when you see your rooms go up because of this and all the hotel rooms across the country go up and you are now saying, oh, I have to get go through a metal detector to get to everywhere from now on, you'll understand why. This I think, is above and beyond. $55 million, I just don't see it. And this isn't because it's a man, woman, or anybody else. Aaron Andrews was wronged, no question, but was it the hotel chain's fault or was it the person that did it? And I think it's much more in the person that did it than it is the hotel chain. They went after deeper pockets.
Well, I think part of the reason that she went after the Marriott is because how deep are the pockets of the guy who did it?
Exactly. You're making a case.
Yeah. You know, just kind of looking here. Jury awards Aaron Andrews $50 million. The stalker Michael Barrett found 51% at fault, so he pays $20 million. The Nashville Marriott pays $26 million for their 49%. So, looking at this from a practical standpoint, Michael Barrett, I'm assuming, is not a multi millionaire. And actually, it kind of becomes more interesting to me as more I see this. Again, you're the attorney, but from my knowledge base, attorneys usually in this kind of thing would probably collecting on a one-third contingency. So if you have 51% if the total value of the reward is $55 million, and 50% of it you're never going to collect, because I'm assuming again that he doesn't really have anything to collect. And what do you call it? And the attorney's taking one third of the total amount, which is about $18.5 million. Is Aaron Andrews only really walking away with $7 million from this deal?
Well, the fact that you're saying that it's a contingency fee, I am not sure it is one, nor are you.
I would just assume it would be. I don't know.
Okay. But let's assume it is. Aaron Andrews would walk, an attorney will get one third or one quarter, whatever has been decided, of the fees that were paid, not necessarily the overall fees. So if there's $29 million paid, then they would get about
$9 to $10 million. Gotcha. So it's not of the total amount, it's the amount that's paid out.
The way that contingencies work, bonuses are taken off the top, no matter what that is. So if it was $1 million in expenses, they get their $1 million back. And then you get one third of the amount that was paid. But even so, I said this 5-6 days ago, I am astonished by the award. I am astonished that they found the Marriott 49% liable. I just don't see it. Unless they were grossly negligent in the fact that they said Aaron Andrews is in the room next door, where the guy said, hey, I'd like the room absolutely next to Aaron Andrews, then I just don't see it. But one person's opinion. And I wasn't in the courtroom. I didn't hear all the testimony. Just one person's opinion.
For all those women who now hate Sean Palmer because of his beliefs and would like to call in and tell him that, please feel free to call in at 760-283-0846.
I am perfectly okay defending my position. I have no problem doing that. Everybody's entitled to their own belief. And does this surprise me? No. People are stalked all the time. I'm not saying it's fair. I'm not saying it's right. But you go after the stalker. You don't go after the place that people where the person stayed. I don't see anything that was so...
Again, I also wonder, and I understand you're reiterating, I do wonder how much her celebrity plays part in this. And I find it very interesting because, look, prior to this episode, she was a well-known sportscaster on ESPN. That's who she was. Sean, you knew who she was. I knew who she was. Sports fans knew who she was. She kind of became a megastar following this.
Yeah, but Seth, you know, that's not fair. And look, I'm the first one to say, at the beginning of this, I'll tell you flat out, my first thought, it was a wrong thought, but my first thought was, this is self-grandizing. This is her putting her name out there to get it bigger. I was wrong. 100% wrong. I was wrong to think it. I admit that now. I was wrong even to contemplate that. But no amount of fame and that's kind of what Marriott was saying, was to your point, she got bigger, she got better, she got more salary, she got much more well-known, she was on Dancing with Stars. This all compensates her fairly for the attack that she had on her privacy. I don't buy it then. I don't buy it from Marriott. When you are attacked in that way and you fear for your safety and you listening to the testimony that I did in the fact that she wakes up with nightmares every night, she is a different person. I can only imagine if that happened to my daughter, if I had one, how I would feel, and I wouldn't even be that person. So I understand that she's gotten more wealthy, but that's not compensation for having your privacy abolished, basically. And there were many different, if you want to read an article about this, Richard Deitch, I always forget how to pronounce his name, had an interesting interview with five or six of the best, what I would consider the best female broadcasters, and how they go about their business and how much security they have and what fears they have. And it speaks to this. And no amount of money, you can't put the genie back in the bottle for Aaron Andrews, and I'm sorry about that. $55 million, no amount of money is going to get you back to where you were, at least psychologically.
No, and for those of you, Richard Deitch is a writer for Sports Illustrated, writes a lot, there's a lot of media pieces, and is probably the best writer that they have right now. Trying to catch his articles on Sunday nights for Monday mornings. Okay, we're doing kind of a jump around because there's so many different things that have been going on today in the last couple of days. A sport we don't talk about very often, simply because, well, I don't think Sean doesn't really watch it. I used to in the pre-Carly days, but a lot less now, is MMA. And two of the biggest names in MMA fought on Saturday night. Conor McGregor, who is the undefeated lightweight champion at 144, undefeated champion at 145, and moved up 25 pounds to fight Nate Diaz, and Holly Holm, who beat the unbeatable Ronda Rousey in November, defending her championship against Misha Tate, who was a top contender who had fought and lost twice to Ronda Rousey previously. And both favorites lost. Holm got choked unconscious in the fifth round, and McGregor tapped out in the second in his fight with Diaz. It's interesting because both fights, Dana White, the president of MMA, or the president of the UFC, did not want Holly Holm fighting before having a rematch with Ronda Rousey. Conor McGregor was supposed to fight the champ for the championship at 155. And the guy got hurt, and this was his fight on 10 days' notice. An uncomfortable place to say the least. But this is a sport that's gotten so much publicity over the last 2, 3, 5 years. And now, with McGregor having lost a little bit of his loss to Ronda Rousey being knocked out, the person that beat Ronda Rousey losing, so many people being injured, issues with the union, with them trying to potentially form a union, issues with Reebok. I'm kind of wondering if UFC's plateaued a little bit.
Well, is it good or bad that there is more parity in the sport? Do you need a dominant player to make it great? Or do you look at boxing, where there were dominant players in the Klitschkos, and there was nobody else? You really can't have it both ways, can you?
Well, you can, because there's different weight classes. The number one fighter in the world is John Jones, has been for years, and until he was arrested last year for potentially vehicular, it wasn't manslaughter, but ended up being some kind of vehicular hit and run. He's coming back. He forfeited his title, and now he's coming back to fight for it in a month or two. Yes, the Klitschkos were not. The Klitschkos were the heavyweight champions of the world, but at no point were they ever considered the best fighters in the world. That was Floyd Mayweather. That was Manny Pacquiao. That was Dwight Jones. That was Bernard Hopkins. All those guys are gone now, and there is no real charismatic guy to pick up the mantle. And part of the reason that boxing has taken such a hit in the last 15 years. MMA, the other reason why boxing has taken such a hit is because of the explosion of MMA. The UFC, previously Strikeforce, Bellator, who's taking a lot of the, I don't want to say the retreads, but it's taking a lot of people from UFC at this point. But the UFC has had so many injuries and volatility over the last couple of years. It's kind of hard to see. I think you do always need the one or two people to carry the mantle. In hockey's popularity prime in the 80s and early 90s, which is when I think it was, you had Gretzky and Lemieux. you had Magic, Michael, and Larry in the 80s and early 90s in basketball. There were other great players, but these were still who everyone was compared to. I don't know if you have that in the UFC right now. You had it with Ronda Rousey in a sport which didn't exist before her, for all intents and purposes, with women's MMA. McGregor was trying to become, he was going to try and win probably three different win championships in three different weight classes. You know, in the way he lost was not, did not bring about a huge deal of support within the MMA community. So I'm not sure who's there to pick up the proverbial mantle at this point.
Well, I think the next fight that we see is going to be Rousey versus Tate again, right?
Yeah. Well, that's what's supposed to happen, but I don't think it's going to. The understanding I have is Rousey is not going to fight probably until November or December. And I cannot imagine Misha Tate is not going to want to defend, you know, make a few bucks and defend her title before that. Whether it's against Holly Holm. Holly Holm was beating the crap out of her for pretty much. Tate won the second round, and that was it. And then she won the last 15 seconds of the fight. Holm dominated 1-3-4 and was winning 5 and would have won the fight if it had gone to the cards. And so I'm not sure. The assumption is that Rousey will not be ready by July. And that's when UFC 2000 comes into play, and that's where they're going to want the title put up for grabs. My guess is it will not be Rousey. My guess is it will be either Kat Zingano or a rematch with Holly Holm, probably a rematch with Holly Holm. And then the winner of that will fight Rousey in November or December.
Sounds awesome. And does Conor McGregor come back and fight again in UFC 2000?
UFC 200. That seems to be the interesting discussion is who does he fight? Where does he fight? He is the 145 champion, but he is a very big 145. I don't know if he'll be able to cut to 145. He has two legitimate people there for him to fight. He has Jose Aldo, who was the pound for pound top three fighter, hadn't lost in 10 years, and McGregor knocked him out with one punch in 10 seconds. In their fight. Or he has Frankie Edgar, who's simply the toughest man in MMA, who was supposed to get this title shot until all this happened. He's going to fight one of those two, would be my guess. And then he would probably permanently move up to 155. You know, he's a very good fighter, but he's not a fighter without flaws. And as charismatic as he is, and he is extraordinarily charismatic and comes off very intelligent in discussion. You know, he's also the kind of guy that you want to see just get the crap beaten out of him. So there are a lot of happy MMA fighters and happy UFC fans to see McGregor go down. I think he probably has one more fight at 145 against either Aldo or Edgar, and then probably moves up to 155. And that's probably where he'll stay for a while, which is a really stacked weight class right now.
So things to look forward to in MMA, but you don't see anybody taking the mantle.
Problem is, you know, we always try and it's very hard to build somebody up after they've been knocked down. And, you know, John Jones, you know, self-destructed a little bit. You go through the champions, you know, Rafael Dos Anjos is not the guy. Robbie Lawler's about 40 years old at 170. Luke Rockhold just doesn't have the charisma at 185. The heavyweight champion is, you know, it's again, probably close to 40 years old, and he's Brazilian. You know, 135 was one of the most amazing stories you'll ever hear about Dominic Cruz, who came back from three torn ACLs, you know, hadn't fought in 4 years and won the title. You know, it's an amazing story, but nobody knows who he is unless you're a UFC, an MMA fan. I don't see the names out there to do it at this point until Rousey comes back, if she comes back. And there's certainly, with her, you know, commercial success, there is no certainty that she will.
Okay, from one sport that I really don't follow to another sport that I really don't follow, and that would be tennis. we're getting through all the non-revenue sports here, which make a lot of money. So tennis, shocking today. Maria Sharapova, announces that you will face a suspension because you failed a drug test at the Australian Open for meltonimian, which is used to treat diabetes and low magnesium. This was only banned by the World Anti-Doping Agency as of January 1st. She's been taking it for over 10 years. Your thoughts?
It seems a little bit ridiculous. This is someone, it's almost like, it would almost be the comparison of Derek Jeter doing this in baseball. It's that surprising. But the idea is that if she had been taking something for 10 years and didn't know, you know, I don't really have an answer. You know, I don't know what the suspension will be. She is not someone who's ever been, who's ever fought any kind of, ever had any of this kind of issue before. She's been taking this since she was 17 years old. She doesn't need the money. She's ranked, you know, number seven in the world, has 35 career titles, about $40 million in career earnings. You know, she has the career grand slam. Now, this is not an Anna Kournikova. Now, this is an all-time great tennis player, and it would be a shame to see her go out like this. Now, the interesting thing with Maria was she always said she wanted to be retired by the time she was 30 years old. And she's doing this at 29. This happens to her at 28 or 29. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because often it's a 2-year ban for performance-enhancing purposes. Oh, this one, I guess, would be a 4-year. Intentional would be a 4-year ban. If it's not done intentionally, then the longest you can do it for is 2 years. I'm just reading the quote from actually her lawyer. If there are mitigating circumstances, as he strongly believes there are, there can be an even greater reduction, including eliminating sanctions. I don't know how this plays out, but I find it hard to imagine that someone who's been taking a drug for 10 years, 3 weeks after she didn't know, but I also feel that's kind of hypocritical in my mind because people use that excuse all the time.
Right. Seth, I don't see this as a elimination of the suspension. I don't think they can do that. I think it would set a horrible precedent to do that, especially since this is for WADA, which is the World Anti-Doping Agency. Horrendous. Because then it goes to just to go sport to sport, right? Then you have, Chris Davis, who said, oh, I took Adderall for 10 years but forgot to get a waiver for this year, so I should be okay. And it goes on and on and on. So I can't see them taking it to that degree, maybe a year. It's got to be something significant, because if you don't, then you're basically playing favorites. And I don't like the favorite card at all.
Breaking news. Very interesting. Just kind of changing from one thing to another quickly. I mean, is there anything else you really want to touch on in regards to this? Or?
No, I'm interested in the breaking news.
Eagles trading DeMarco Murray to the Titans.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So the Eagles basically doing a total reset from last year, because they have traded Byron Maxwell and Kiko Alonso today to the Dolphins, pending physicals, and now they have traded DeMarco Murray. So the three biggest acquisitions from last year are all off the team already.
Yeah.
I wonder if the Titans, who did need a running back, so good for them, did they accept the contract, which was, I believe it was an $7 million contract for this year, or did they renegotiate that deal? But Chip Kelly obviously is being thrown out, well, was thrown out. Howie Roseman is once again putting his stamp back on the team, and gone. Wow, big deal.
So it'll be interesting. No compensation has been released yet, but it's expected to be draft picks, which would make sense.
Yeah, and I think it'll be draft picks. I think it'll be like a sixth rounder. I mean, the Eagles obviously did not want Murray, and they owed him big money. In fact, I'm going to look up what the money was, but it was big money.
Kind of staying in the NFL realm, one of the least surprising things to come out today is the Redskins releasing RG3. Robert Griffin III, no longer the starter of the last year in Washington, backing up pretty much the third string to Kirk Cousins, kind of a long fall for 4 years after an amazing rookie year in Washington. Tim, interesting to see where he goes. Does he try and rebuild his career starting somewhere, say Houston or say St. Louis, or I guess Los Angeles Rams now, the team that actually traded his draft pick years ago to Washington? Or does he go to a place and try to kind of rebuild his style, become the backup in Pittsburgh for a year or two, become the backup in Arizona, where he could have time to kind of relearn his trade a little bit and, eventually take over for a Carson Palmer? He's a guy who has handled this relatively well, in my mind.
But, Seth, he's neither – if you look at those two systems, he's not a Todd Haley back quarterback. He's not Bruce Arians quarterback. So to be a backup even at – I mean, the goal for a good backup is to be able, especially in the NFL these days, when – especially with those two quarterbacks who never last a full season, is the fact that they have to come in and run the offense. Robert Griffin III is not a replacement.
Oh, I completely agree with you. Agree with you. But he is a talented quarterback. And the question is, under this happenstance, would he take a step back and say, okay, I need to relearn and see if I can learn how to run this type of offense instead of what he's been running previously? Because more and more that's kind of going away, it seems.
I just don't think he has the talent to play that offense. He's not that type of quarterback.
Well, that may be true. That very well may be true. He may not have the skill set to go. So if you're Robert Griffin III, where are you? What are you looking at right now?
You're looking at a Denver situation where you can run zone reads. You're looking at a backup if you wanted to. The ideal place for him, I'm not saying he's going to go there, and I'm not sure that they're going to want him, is Carolina. Backup Cam Newton?
Well, after as much as he was beaten, well, first of all, do you think he wants it? As a competitive guy, do you think he wants to be in a place where he's not going to get the chance to at least try and start?
I don't think my friends and I at work were trying to figure out how many starting quarterbacks availabilities there are in the NFL right now. We came up with four. Cleveland, the Jets, assuming Ryan Fitzpatrick is not back, the Rams, and Houston. That's it. There are no other places where he would even compete to be a starting quarterback.
Off the top of my head, I agree with you.
So if that's the case, he doesn't fit any of those profiles. He doesn't fit a Jets profile. He certainly doesn't fit.
He doesn't fit a
Houston profile. He's not going. He's going to have to go back and take a backup job. He's not going to compete for a starting salary. I just don't see. The only place where he could go to compete for a starting spot, maybe, is L.A. Maybe they take a shot on that. But no other offense does he fit.
L.A., because L.A. doesn't have realistically doesn't have a set offense. They have Todd Gurley. And the problem I see, Fisher had Steve McNair in his prime, and McNair, while a mobile quarterback, was not that kind of, was not an RG3 mobile quarterback. And I don't even know what Fisher does at this point. He just seems to keep his job and go 6-10 every year.
But Steve McNair had much better arm than RG3 does.
Yes. Yeah.
And he was
he was a Cam Newton. He was a much bigger
He was a much bigger guy. As I said, I'm not sure what the right answer for RG3 is at this point. It amazes me how quickly he fell, you know, from someone who was, you know, the rookie of the year, someone who really took the world on fire, for lack of a better term. And it's been a long, very quick fall.
Well, but injuries take their toll, Seth. I mean, it's not talent that RG3 got lost in. It was injuries that RG3 got lost in. And there are many stories of players that, I mean, look, there's a guy that you hype up all the time for the Hall of Fame. Terrell Davis fell that quickly. He was the MVP 1 year. 3 years later, he was out of the league.
Yeah. But the difference being Terrell Davis never recovered from his injury. RG3 has physically recovered from the injuries, as far as we know.
Maybe. Have we seen it?
I said as far as we know.
Right.
I didn't say we knew either way.
Well, and I think that's the point, right? We don't know. And Washington wasn't willing to take a $16 million chance on that. Quite frankly, neither would I. So here we go. We see where he's going to go. And there are free agency actually starts Wednesday at 4 o'clock. So it'll be definitely an interesting couple of days. They have changed the rules around free agency where you can now talk about deals, but you can't sign a deal, and you can't talk in specifics about deals, which it's ridiculous. You can say,
I feel dumber just having listened to that, to the last three sentences that came out of your mouth.
Right. It's pretty, and it's not out of my mouth. It's out of the commissioner's mouth, where it's basically, imagine you're a free agent and I'm a general manager. Would it take something north of $15 million, but south of $16 million, and assign more than 9, but less than 9.5, however, only $20 million of maybe $30 million is guaranteed over the course of 5 or 6 years. Does that sound about right?
I stopped listening halfway through because I felt myself getting dumber.
Right, but that's what they could say. That's the limit of what they can say. So
it's moronic.
It's moronic. So expect a couple of deals to seep out on Wednesday. Maybe Thursday, and for Jets fans everywhere, you got to hope that Ryan Fitzpatrick, who reports are that the negotiations are not going so well, does not sign with another team, because I can't take another year of Geno Smith.
Geno. Well, you do have Kyle Petty.
Bryce Petty.
Bryce Petty. Is that Richard Petty's son?
No, neither one is Richard. I think Kyle Petty actually is Richard.
So,
yeah. Petty's son. Okay, well, my bad. Anyway. The agency is on the way, no question about it. And that will start this week. And it's Seth's favorite week of the NFL, the offseason.
So, between that and championship week, my goodness, if only I wasn't working 80 hours a week, this would be awesome. But I am, and it is. So anyway, jumping from the free agency to championship week, we're in championship week, and not a good weekend for either of our teams. And to continue the Sean Palmer, if you want to call in and request any other Sean Palmer songs today, 760-283-0846. I was reading this on one of the big Maryland blogs, that this is the most disappointing Maryland team of our lifetime. And
wow,
I don't disagree. This is a team that in very, very few spots, at home against Ohio State, now. You know, a couple, three or four or five games have played to their potential, and at their top have been probably the most talented team in college basketball this year. They've lost four out of six. They have not looked good all year for all intents and purposes. They've kind of won games at the buzzer, won games by four, won games by six. They just haven't gelled the way you would have hoped a team with four potential first-round draft picks would. They're going in as a four seed to the Big Ten tournament. We're looking probably at a four or a five seed. And I'll be honest, we just don't really deserve any more than that. Still a better year than your guys, than Sean's beloved Cuse, but considering what our expectations were, I am pretty disappointed with this team.
Well, you are not the only person that is disappointed, because if we don't win on Wednesday, I don't think we make the tournament. And then my March stinks. And April stinks. Just all of it stinks. It's been an incredibly disappointing, disheartening year for the Cuse. But I got to tell you, and this is the only thing that made me smile. The only people that should be more disappointing than you and me is if you're a fan of the BC Eagles. Do you know anything of what I'm talking about?
I know they're like 0-18 in the ACC, and I think they're 0-8 in the football conference of the ACC.
That's right.
Does that sound about right?
They are 0-26 in conference in the last two sports. Wow. So way back when Boston College was going with Virginia Tech and Miami down to the ACC, I wrote something for the now defunct, I don't even remember what newspaper I was writing it for at the time. I really can't remember. It was when I was in Syracuse, so it was 1997, 1998, or somewhere around there, when the ACC expanded for the first time. And I didn't want Syracuse to leave for the ACC because I liked them in the Big East. And I didn't want, but I understood why Miami was leaving. I understood a little bit why Virginia Tech was leaving, but I couldn't for the life of me understand why BC was leaving, other than for the money. And at the time I said, BC, who was a very big fish in the Big East, which was a very small pond, was leaving to become the smallest fish in one of the biggest ponds in the ACC. And unfortunately, my fortune-telling was spot on. Because 0-26 in conference for two sports is mind-blowing to me. Even Rutgers won a game in the Big Ten. And they don't belong there either. Has the college expansion really killed college sports? Because I'm not sure it made it any better. What do you think?
That's a discussion for another day, but it has not been a positive. Okay. I mean, if you want to, I think this is something we could spend an hour on. But the reality is it has never been a positive. You know, we've talked about this before. You know, again, in a lot of ways, we're old school sports fans. I like the Big Eight with Oklahoma and Nebraska playing every year to try and go to the Orange Bowl. I liked the Big East. I shouldn't say the Big East. The Big Ten was the Big Ten. And you had a legitimate Big East football conference. I liked it that way. You know, I never, although it's probably been a positive for Maryland, I never saw a need for us to jump from the ACC to the Big Ten. However, from the financial perspective, it made sense.
Well, but Seth, that's the point. For everybody, the financial perspective, these all make sense.
Well, but that's why it's done, as you said. You know, it's not done with the fans in thought. I mean, who was your biggest rival? Georgetown.
True.
Yeah.
Syracuse and Georgetown.
played him this year, but we played him in December.
So I mean, it's just a different mindset. And it's just not as it's not as enjoyable to me. I still love it dearly, but I loved getting ready for that Maryland-Duke game. I loved getting ready for that Maryland-Carolina game. A little bit harder to get excited for Maryland-Nebraska.
Well, that's the thing. Yesterday's game for you guys, where you lost to Indiana, would have been Maryland-Duke or Maryland-North Carolina. That's how the schedule, or Maryland, North Carolina State. Like, it would have been probably one of those three teams playing the last game of your conference year. And instead, you did come home, and they are a top 15 team, but you came home from Maryland, Indiana, which doesn't have the same panache. Sorry.
No, it doesn't.
So
we got about 15 minutes left. One of the more interesting scores I've seen in a long time happened yesterday. Golden State, 53-4, on track to challenge the Chicago Bulls for the greatest single season in NBA history. Lose by 17 to the 13-51 Lakers. I don't know. You can't compare regular season upsets from sport to sport because, for the most part, it's a regular season game. Nobody gets that excited about them unless it's the NFL where there's only 16 of them. But not often. But of all the games that you saw the Warriors losing, this is a team that's beaten the Thunder three times, beaten Cleveland, beaten San Antonio. They beat the Nets at the buzzer. They beat the Sixers at the buzzer. They beat the Nets in double overtime. And they lose by 17 to the Lakers. How do you even explain that, or do you just don't even try?
Well, it actually set a record with the difference in winning percentages. Because I think the Lakers had like a 15% winning percentage, and the Warriors had like a 91% winning percentage, and it was the biggest difference between the two percentages in NBA history of a loss. So, do you really have a reason to explain this? No, but once again, it goes to the point that any team can be beaten on any day, right? I mean,
yeah.
The Lakers do have some talent. They're not devoid of talent.
They
do. They do. Look.
They do.
Look, Julius Randle is a talent. D'Angelo Russell is a talent. Are those talents materialized to the point that they can every single game? No. I mean, that's why they're young players. But do they have talent? Sure. I mean, if you look at the box score yesterday, which I am pulling up right now.
I am right now. I think what explains it best is the starting five for Golden State shot 2 for 25 from 3-point land.
Yeah, well, that
Sean,
was 13%.
I'm pretty sure I could shoot better than 2 for 25.
I'm very happy you said just you, because I'm not sure I could.
Yeah, I know you couldn't. But
yeah, but I could rebound.
I'm pretty sure I could.
I could rebound every single miss. Jordan Clarkson has 25 points. Look, Clarkson was a first-round pick. Was he?
Was he a first-round pick, or was he a second-round pick?
You're probably right.
Free agent. I just know he's young.
Hold on. Pulling that up. Come on.
Second-round pick by Washington.
Right.
In 2014.
You have Julius Randle, first-round pick, had 14 rebounds. D'Angelo Russell had 4 steals, second pick overall. I don't even know who led it. Marcelo Huertas had 9 assists after coming into the game with 2.8 assists a game. He was signed as a free agent. But
but he spent the last 4 years with FC Barcelona. So he's got some talent. So the fact is they do have talent on the team, and they just happen to put it all together for one game. And as you said before, Golden State just missed a whole lot of shots.
Yeah, look, it's a snoozer game that you're not really getting up for, because there's just – you're just thinking that the game is over going in. And when you're 56-5, that happens. 55-5, that happens. I am sure Steve Kerr, in a certain way, is happy this happened, because it keeps his team a bit grounded going forward.
The only problem is now, in order to go 72-10, they have one less loss that they can have. Do you think they make it to 72-10?
I don't know. I'd have to look at the schedule. I'd have to look at their schedule. Probably not. They'll probably end up at 68-69. Look, if you get to 70 wins, it's a hell of an accomplishment. And the West, although not as strong as in previous years, you still have the Spurs, who are on track for 65 wins. The Thunder are still very good. You know, it's the second tier, which has taken a huge step back, with the Clippers really there but not there. Houston may not even make the playoffs. You know, Marcus Gasol out for Memphis. Dallas is not really a threat. It does seem more top-heavy than it has in prior years.
Is it possible that there is a team more – a quieter team in the NBA and maybe in the last 20 years than the Spurs this year? They're on track for 65 wins and you barely hear a peep of them.
The way they prefer it. You know, you look at them, they're 53-9. So they're on track for approximately 65 to 67 wins, which would be a top 20 season of all time. You don't hear a word out of them. You know, Manu Ginobili comes back, scores 22 points last night in like 15 minutes. Nobody cares. They're a non-entity. And it's a really interesting situation. Kawhi Leonard's probably a top five MVP candidate, or in the ballpark at least. It's just nobody pays attention to that team. And not only are they very good, they're going to be very good for years to come.
And the interesting thing is LaMarcus Aldridge has averaged March 7th, so he's played in three games. In his last 10 games, he's averaged 18 points and 9 boards. He's averaging for this year 17 points and 9 boards. From a guy that averaged over 20 his entire career, and there were concern. Well, he averaged 19.2 points a game over his career. Last year, he averaged 23-10, and there were concerns how he was going to fit in with the team. Fit in? He's just become a seamless transition, isn't it? He's shooting over 50% from the field. He's hauling down 8.4 rebounds, including almost 2.5 rebounds, offensive rebounds a game. He's shooting 85% for the free throw line. This team is a machine, and everybody buys in. And I think that's the point, right? Everybody buys in. Popovich does an incredible job.
You don't see San Antonio to win the MVP. Yes, Duncan won it in. Kawhi Leonard is having a phenomenal year. You go because you've been a stud on a lower-tier team for years, and you've made your money, and you want to win a championship, or at least threaten for a championship. And that's why Andre Miller is there. And that's why David West turned down an extra, I think, $10 million a year to go there. And that's why LaMarcus Aldridge is there. You know, they're the New England Patriots sans the controversy of the NBA. They win effectively.
Nobody should get you wrong in the fact that LaMarcus Aldridge is making good money.
Yes,
he did sign a max deal. Now, granted, one last year, but he did sign a max deal. He's averaging, for the next 4 years, he's going to average over $21 million. So it's not like
Okay, let me rephrase. No one is crying for LaMarcus Aldridge. He did not take a particularly take a pay cut to come here, to go to San Antonio. David West did, but he did not. That being said, the second Popovich never goes after free agents, ever. He re-signs his own. But how many big-time free agents have you seen San Antonio sign over the last 10 years?
One. That was it.
Exactly.
Yep.
So
I agree.
This is a team that builds on itself, builds from the international, bringing guys like Boris Diaw and Patty Mills. It's a team that has been built originally around David Robinson, that transitioned to Tim Duncan, that transition to Tony Parker, that transition to Kawhi Leonard. Now, you have one of the five best coaches of all time running it. You have a team that just looks for every advantage, whether it's bringing the best woman, Becky Harmon, the first woman to be an assistant coach, and Becky Harmon, the first real international coach. I don't know how to pronounce his name. I think it's Edwin Messina. Who was a coach of Benetton in Spain, I believe. You know, he was considered the best coach in Europe and took a step back to be an assistant in the NBA with Popovich. You know, they are the preeminent franchise in the NBA. And with all respect to Golden State, there's nobody close.
So we got 5 minutes left. Actually, we got less than that. I wanted to take unfortunately, the world lost two people this week. Shannon Forty, who worked in media relations for the Mets, died of breast cancer. She was 44. She worked there for over 20 years. So number two, I know we don't get very political on the show, and I don't talk politics very much at all, but the first first lady that I ever remember was Nancy Reagan. And she passed away this week, and the Reagans were our sweetheart couple when we were kids. They did everything together, and when Ronald Reagan had Alzheimer's, Nancy Reagan took care of us, took care of him. The Say No to Drugs campaign was all Nancy Reagan's. The only thing, one of the few things I really remember straight out from my youth on TV was Say No to Drugs, and Nancy Reagan was a tremendous asset, and unfortunately, she passed away. She passed away at a time in her life that she was ready to do such.
I don't have anything quite as profound as that. So, and I don't really have anything really to close on.
Well, let me ask you this. Close. What is your prediction for Maryland in the ACC tournament? What are you thinking?
I think they haven't been in an ACC tournament in 3 years.
All right, Big Ten tournament.
We lose to Indiana in the semis, and we end up getting the 5 seed.
5 seed in the tournament, okay. I think Syracuse wins the first game against Pittsburgh in a very close game, and they wind up in the play-in game in the first round. So they lose in the second game. And playing game, you know what? We made the tournament. I'm happy with that. For Seth Kamens, it's
right.
Been short.
We may be doing a Sunday night show, post-tournament bracket. We're probably going to be moving for the next 2 months or so to Sunday nights because I'm in busy season. It's just damn hard. So we'll do a show after the brackets come out, pretty much all college hoops next week. For Sean Palmer, this is Seth Kamens, backsportspage.com. Have a good night, everybody.